So moving to the Middle East now, much has been made of ISIS as some tribe of true believers, the lead army of Islam that wants to restore Muslim society and culture to the peak of power and wealth that it knew back in the 9th century. But the circumstances of the attacks in Ottawa, Canada, while still sketchy, suggest that ISIS operates more as a kind of global fan club for sociopaths, suicidal malcontents who dream of going out with a murderous bang somewhere in the world, or disillusioned loners who see ISIS as a kind of boy and girl scout camp for violent acting out, with the offer of guns, camaraderie, mates, war, fame, a sympathetic comic book god, and access to social media. This is an offer unstable members in societies all over the world may be finding too tempting to refuse. A fight club for our time. We do know that the shooter in Canada converted to Islam and had been living in a homeless shelter and, according to the police commissioner there, was suffering from mental health problems. He also had a history of drug use and unemployment. Is he precisely the kind of individual who hears the call from ISIS? Hussein Rashid is a professor of religion at Hofstra University. Hussein, welcome.
Thank you, John, for having me on today.
What do you think of that analysis of ISIS?
You know, I think you've hit on something really important here in terms of when we look at these so-called radicalized individuals, what we're finding is they're really inspired by Daesh, the Arabic name for ISIS. I'm sort of loath to give them the legitimacy of Islamic to their name, but who are inspired by Daesh because they are mentally unstable. They are loners. They are on the outcasts of society, and they're looking to bring control and order to their lives. And I think Daesh, in their imagination, gives them that opportunity.
So they're more like the Manson family.
I think to a certain extent. I think the idea that they're being inspired. And I think that if we take that viewpoint, we see there have been three horrific attacks recently. In Montreal, there was a Canadian soldier who was attacked in a hit-and-run attack. There was the attack in Ottawa. And recently in New York, we saw four rookie police officers who were attacked by an individual. Initially, the thoughts were that he was a Muslim convert as well. It seems that it perhaps was not related. But if we take the idea of needing order, structure, mental health issues into consideration, then we see these individuals as part of a complex that includes the Oak Creek shooter, that includes the Sandy Hook shooting. I grew up in New York, and I remember the very first theater shooting that happened in America around The Godfather in Long Island. It was 10 minutes from my house. Those individuals come under here as well. So, you know, we've got to start asking bigger questions. We can't, you know, I'm hearing people throwing around terms like sudden jihad syndrome. That tells us nothing in terms of culturally what's happening, how to prevent it. It weakens our national security. And it demeans a religion of 1.6 billion believers worldwide.
So you would say that ISIS, and you don't want to use the name, but I don't have another option, but please forgive me, that ISIS really is more of a cousin to the Hells Angels motorcycle gang. The idea of antisocial groups that use various aspects of technology to project their power, but within themselves emotionally, they are really relatively powerless people.
And I think that you've hit on two really important points. One is the projection of power that's being used by Daesh. I think when we look at their horrific beheading videos, it really is to goad America and the UK to respond. That gives them legitimacy. The use of Islamic gives them legitimacy. But looking at these individuals, I think one of the most provocative things the NYPD counterterrorism unit did, and unfortunately they let it go, was to look at radicalization as really gang initiation and looking at these individuals as looking for a sense of family, a sense of belonging, and a sense of control that they were otherwise lacking. And again, I think if you frame it in those discussions, it's a much more fruitful way to understand what's happening to these individuals rather than saying, okay, there's a grand ideological motive that doesn't exhibit anywhere else except in this one particular small grouping of people.
But if the Hells Angels had acquired, half of the state of Wyoming and was trying to take over it, it wouldn't exactly be useful to send a busload of psychiatrists to Wyoming to try to fight back. This is a military exercise now trying to roll them back, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And, I'm not suggesting that when we look at Iraq or Syria that we send in mental health care professionals. But I think here within the United States, what we see is that despite the struggles of numerous minority communities, whether it is African-Americans, Latinos, Catholics, Irish, Italians, Arab Muslims, South Asian Muslims, there's always been a process of integration. And therefore, minority communities tend to be well integrated in America. So we're not looking at big cultural shifts here. What we're saying is our social safety net is fraying economically, in terms of health care. Thankfully, we still are able to manage Ebola at the moment here in New York, but we saw what happened in Texas when it frayed. So how do we build up a resilient society that brings in more than a security lens and saying, okay, let's take this easy answer and demonize a group of people?
You know, maybe part of the answer is to articulate, and I think many Muslim clerics are doing this, but there's a built-in ambivalence here in the sense that it's hard sometimes to deliver a message which says ISIS is not a part of Islam, but taking it to the next level where traditional Islam is actually fighting against ISIS, that actually if you want to join us as a religion, that's a way to keep yourself from being vulnerable to these, gang members who are basically doing something that is utterly anti-Islamic. That's a hard message to articulate.
It is a hard message to articulate, yet it is, as you've pointed out, articulated. There's a letter to Baghdadi. I think it's lettertobaghdadi.com, the so-called caliph of Daesh, where these scholars have said this is against the tradition. So you've got this scholarly response. But the other thing is I think we have to remember is that the vast majority for over a decade, of victims of these terrorist attacks have been other Muslims. We see this with what Daesh is doing in Iraq, in Syria, what they did in Afghanistan, what the Taliban did in Afghanistan, what they're doing in Pakistan. That West Point has shown that numerically the number one victims are Muslims. That Muslims are the ones fighting and dying against Daesh. And we can't let that go either. So I think I just want to highlight that point in terms of speaking out.
So who's the point person here against ISIS? The West is the infidel, but who can credibly fight the ideology of ISIS and bring back these people who are so vulnerable before we go?
You know, I don't know if there's any one person in the same way that there's not one person that gave us Daesh. There happens to be a spokesperson there, but really they're operating as independent military units under sort of a nominal allegiance. So how do we address that?
But our understanding, our more rational understanding of what ISIS is certainly a good start.
Absolutely.
Hussein Rashid is a professor of religion at Hofstra University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.